Welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, ElectroDragon505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, if you managed to look at the title, then you probably know exactly what you're going to be getting yourself into. But specifically, however, I am going to be talking about the latest news that happened this week. Well, maybe not necessarily much on the news, because I'm going to be very honest, there really isn't a lot of animation news that happened this week. So what I'm going to do instead, I will talk about the one big animation news over the fact that DreamWorks Animation did announce two brand new animated features that they added into their schedule. But then afterwards, I will be looking into three new trailers that came out this week. One that really sucked, one that was just meh, and another one that was actually really good. And then finally, I will end things off with another piece of animation news with Animat's Pick of the Week. Now, if you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And before I go and get things started, I just want to go and make a couple of shout-outs. Well, maybe not shout-outs, but a little bit more plugins, because these are more my things. I just want to mention right now that just yesterday, like the day before this podcast actually got released, I have officially released the long-awaited Animation Lookback Cartoon Network series. I have released part one, which looks into the genesis of Cartoon Network, all the way up to the behind the scenes of Ed, Edd n Eddy. So if you want to go and look into the history of Cartoon Network, you can go on my YouTube channel, ElectroDragon505, to check that out. And not only that, but I have officially started my gaming channel, Animat Plays. So you can go on YouTube, search for Animat Plays. I have already started and did a couple of live streams already. I did one for Epic Mickey for the Nintendo Wii, and I also played the mini games of Pokemon Stadium on the Nintendo 64. So you can go and check it out right over there, and you can join me on some crazy live streams that are going to be happening every Tuesday at 4 p.m., well, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And not only that, but I would also like to make one quick mention about Mexico, considering recently disaster did struck into the country when giant earthquakes occurred, which really damaged a lot of properties and sadly killed a lot of people. But I'm going to be very honest, I am not that worried about Mexico. And the reason why I say that, it is because Mexico, I've been there several times, and it is a country that it is as equally as strong as it is beautiful. I am confident that the people of Mexico can pick themselves back up and do whatever they can to rebuild their entire place in order to make it completely beautiful again. It is tragic what has happened, but I am pretty sure that Mexico is capable of picking themselves back up in order to stay strong and be ready for whatever's going to happen to them. They are just fantastic people, those Mexicans. And I mean, you'd have to have serious mental problems if you think that you need to separate yourselves from those Mexicans and build something as stupidly pointless as a wall or something. Honestly, in my case, I welcome all Mexicans with open arms. And if you coincidentally are Mexican and you're listening to this podcast, hola! All right, but anyways, those are just my little shout-outs. But now with that out of the way, let's go ahead and get things started with the animation news, with the first one that I have for you today, with DreamWorks Animation. Now, recently, DreamWorks actually did pull in quite a surprise, which really did signal the start of the Halloween season. And with the Halloween season, what usually happens is that, you know, you start to see the spoopy things happening, you see the images of, like, vampires, werewolves, and Frankenstein monsters coming up. And one of their movies that they have announced is actually a bit of a Halloween theme, per se. Or it's actually more monster-themed. But the reason why it really does feel like Halloween with DreamWorks Animation's announcement is that they actually got one project that actually rose back from the dead like a freaking zombie. It was an unexpected move, and holy crap, yes, it's officially back that DreamWorks Animation has announced two brand new animated features for 2020 and 2021, which include Spooky Jack and The Croods 2. So let me just begin with Spooky Jack, and going into my source here on Variety, it actually stated about Spooky Jack, the story follows three siblings who move into an eerie new home, sorry about that, and discover that all the creatures we've been told don't exist actually do. They must handle some unusual squatters, from mischievous leprechauns and the elusive Bigfoot to a shy boogeyman that won't stop going bump in the night. Apparently, Robert Ben Garrett will write the script, while DreamWorks Animation's Damon Ross will produce. And one of the big things about Spooky Jack in general is that one of the executive producers is actually going to be Jason Blum. And if you don't know who Jason Blum is, he is actually the mad genius who is shaping up what the horror genre is today. This is the man responsible for many of the biggest names in modern horror, right, that's going on right now, thanks to his production house with Blumhouse Productions. And these include the Paranormal Activity movies, the Insidious films, and even this year's Split and Get Out. But that's probably not the big one that you're probably curious about. You want to know more about The Croods 2. Well, so far, the thing that they've mentioned about The Croods 2 is that we don't really know what the plot is going to be about. The only thing that they have confirmed is, one, the release date, which is actually quite surprising, and two, who's going to be among the cast. Now, they did reveal that all the actors, or at least the main actors, will be returning, including Nicolas Cage, Emma Stone, Ryan Reynolds, Catherine Keener, Cloris Leachman, and Clark Duke. But on top of that, Leslie Mann will be joining the cast as well. And other than that, we don't necessarily know much else about it. We don't know the plot of The Croods 2. We do know the release dates. But interestingly enough, we don't really know about who is going to be the directors of these films. That has yet to be confirmed. Maybe DreamWorks Animation has already picked a director for this, and maybe they're not revealing it to us, but yeah, overall, we don't know who's going to be the director of either The Croods 2 and Spooky Jack. Now, with all that said, let me just go into the aspect of The Croods 2, and why is it's so shocking that DreamWorks Animation would actually go and do this? Now, if you may remember, way back in November of last year, DreamWorks Animation actually did announce that they actually canceled The Croods 2, because for a while, ever since the release of The Croods, they did consider making a sequel to it, considering that the movie did end up becoming not a huge franchise, but it actually did end up being pretty successful at the box office, making a total of $587 million worldwide. So, of course, DreamWorks would love to jump into it and try to go and make more. But for a while, they've been trying and trying, and things just didn't seem to work out, and ultimately, they decided to go and cancel it. But somehow, 10 months later, here we are right now, where not only they know that they want to make a Croods 2, but they even set their release date for it, which I will say right now is going to be for 2020, so about 7 years after the release of the first Croods. And with all that said, I really want to know what the fridge happened during those weird 10 months that there was no Croods 2. Like, what actually did happen during that time? Is it that they decided to pull it out and maybe they had it in the back of their heads that they still want to go and make another Croods, but, you know, they just want to find, like, what would be the good answer for it. I don't know. It just seems like a very weird period, especially the fact that many of the crew members that were there, they ended up moving on to other projects. I have seen people, like, right after they announced that the Croods got canceled, they would actually post some of their animation work that they've done for it onto websites like Vimeo. Like, I remember there was this one animator who actually posted some animation tests for the Croods 2, which would feature a brand new character, which, the best way that I can describe that new character, imagine, like, you know, like with Gru and Drew in Despicable Me 3? Well, imagine this new character is like Drew, but for Nicolas Cage's character. That's the best way that I could put it from what I remember. That and also, the director who was originally assigned to the Croods 2, Kirk D'Amico, who also was a co-director of the first Croods, he would move on to Sony Pictures Animation in order to go and direct Vivo. If you guys may know, that's Sony Animation's project, which they're going to be releasing in 2020, which will feature music from Lin-Manuel Miranda. So, honestly, at that point, that's the people that I want to know their thoughts on this announcement right over here. Like, I want to know from Kirk D'Amico how he feels that he had to move from DreamWorks Animation to some dead-end, deadbeat animation studio, wondering, like, how did you go from here and then suddenly they decided to go back into making the Croods 2? Like, seriously, that's just, like, really weird right over there. And how it happened, that I'm not sure. But for me personally, the announcement of a Croods 2, honestly, I'm more shocked over the fact that, like, a project that was once considered dead is now back from, like, it's now, like, pretty much back in production, and now it is actually going to be a thing. That aspect I'm more surprised about. But in terms of actually having a Croods 2, I'm not necessarily that big on it. I don't necessarily care that much. I'm not saying that the first Croods is that bad. It's just that I feel like the first Croods is just a little bit more juvenile, per se. And I think that's actually the first movie where DreamWorks Animation started to really gear their movies towards exclusively for kids. Like, they would have a good track record making movies for kids and adults to enjoy, you know, make an entire family picture. But, like, starting with the Croods, it started to feel like now they're just doing it for the kids, you know? It's like for the 6 to 12 year olds. And it would then continue on with some of their other movies as well, like Turbo, and then there was Penguins of Madagascar, and then there was Home, and then there was Fudge Nabbit, what else? There's like Trolls, and then just recently with The Boss Baby. Now, of course, they've made a few family pictures in between at the same time, but this is really the one that started where now they're being a kids animation studio, per se. And as for Spooky Jack, well, this is the first time that we've really heard about it, and maybe this could have some potential. It all depends on the execution of it, because there are two ways that you can really go with this one. It's either one, you would go and make it a light horror in the veins of something like Paranorman or even Coraline, or you would actually go and produce something like Monsters, Inc. or Hotel Transylvania, where you would have a whole bunch of monsters, but it's not scary at all. It's all meant for, like, you know, lighthearted fun, basically. But considering that Jason Blum is an executive producer, I wouldn't be surprised that they would go into the route of those light horror stop-motion animated features, and especially one that it wouldn't surprise me that they would also emulate is something like Frankenweenie as well. So those are the three big movies that I think of that that Spooky Jack could actually end up being. I wouldn't be surprised if it could end up becoming something like Coraline or Paranorman or Frankenweenie. But then again, that's more something that we'll just have to wait and see. But You know, I do wish the best of luck for DreamWorks Animation for creating The Croods 2 and Spooky Jack. But if you guys are interested to go and see those movies and you want to go and immediately mark your calendars onto that, then all you have to do is just wait until September 18th, 2020 for the release of The Croods 2. And then you also got September 17th, 2021 for Spooky Jack. Oh, actually, hold on. There is actually one more comment that I want to make, and it's actually regarding The Croods 2. Before we go, before we go to the next story, the thing about The Croods 2, actually, now that I did mention the release date, that it is released it's going to be released 7 years after the original, it is going to be interesting to see what kind of reactions are we going to get, because, like, 7 years after the original is actually quite a long time. It's not long enough to be in the nostalgic levels, but, you know, it is pretty distant, I would say. Like, all the kids that enjoyed watching The Croods, like, when The Croods 2 is going to be out, they're going to become teenagers. So, that's going to be an interesting reaction to see how they're going to feel about it. But, anyways, who knows how it's going to go. But again, 2020 is going to be The Croods 2, and 2021 is going to be for Spooky Jack. Okay, so for our next story right over here, well, actually, this is going to be our next set of stories right over here, considering that instead of an animation news story, considering that we didn't really have much this week, we actually have a trifecta of trailers. And the order that I want to go here is that I want to go and get the worst one out of the way first, then right in the middle we'll have the decent one. It's like from it can have some different reactions, like it's either mediocre or if it's okay and stuff like that. And then I will go and save the best trailer for last. The one that's really been trending and it's really been hyping people up. So that's pretty much the order that I want to go with this set of trailers right over here. So with all that said, let's go ahead and start with the worst one in order to get that crap out of the way. And when I say the worst, of course, this year, there is one company that really does try to really earn itself the place to be among the worst of the worst. And of course, I am referring to Sony Pictures Animation, since this week they have released the trailer for their upcoming live-action animation hybrid of Peter Rabbit, which you may know is based on the book series by Beatrix Potter. And in the trailer that Sony presented us right over here, basically, I can make a short summary out of it. It's basically you got Peter Rabbit who wants to go and throw this big party at Mr. McGregor's house and hijinks ensue. That's basically all that I could say about it. And yeah, looking at the trailer right over here, yeah, this really did suck. But first and foremost, I just want to go and get this out of the way. People, I think now with the release of Peter Rabbit, we need to start not being surprised whenever Sony Pictures Animation starts releasing a trailer that ends up looking really, really bad. It's no longer a coincidence. We're starting to see a pattern. Because this year, when it comes to the trailers that they have released, with the exception of Smurfs The Lost Village, like, every single one of them really did suck. And the only thing that Sony Animation has done better than any other studio is gathering up all the dislikes and all the negative comments on social media. In fact, looking at Peter Rabbit right now, you can see that there's a majority of dislikes going on. As I'm recording this podcast, it so far has about more than 1,400 likes and more than 1,800 dislikes. And if you look back at the previous trailers that Sony Animation has released this year, you got the Emoji Movie that's been collecting so many dislikes. And then you also got The Star, which, because of its low quality, also really got a whole bunch of dislikes because people are just absolutely confused over the fact that why is this direct-to-video film being released in theaters by this major studio by Sony? That makes no sense whatsoever. So I'm just saying that as a little piece of advice. Whenever you would see the logo of Sony Pictures Animation, it's probably for the best that you set your expectations or you set your standards all the way down to low. Like, as default, you would think, this is gonna suck. I'm just saying that so you can save the troubles for whenever Sony Animation releases a trailer. You're not gonna end up being so shocked that, oh my god, how can this be so terrible? It's like, well, duh, it's Sony Animation. What the fridge else do you expect? Okay, but anyways, with all that said, let me get into this trailer. It really does suck. I mean, the thing is, I just feel like this trailer is 8 years too late. This is something that should have been released somewhere at the end of the... this should have been released at the end of the 2000s or at the beginning of the 2010s, really. Because this is just trying to emulate many of the other live-action animation hybrids that's been going on. Like, that really was such an annoying trend back then. Like, this is just trying to copy stuff like Alvin and the Chipmunks. This is trying to copy Yogi Bear. And considering that this is from Sony Animation, this is trying to copy the Smurfs. And it's just embarrassing to watch. And honestly, the thing that makes it intolerable is mostly the fact that they really are trying to modernize Peter Rabbit. The fact that they really want to make him such a party goer. And then you also got one scene where you got Peter Rabbit in a garden and like he has a whole bunch of lettuce leaves and he's just trying to go out like with all the other rabbits trying to go like, make it rain, make it rain, make it rain. It's just intolerable. And in fact, it's just so much, it's so much filled with like already with the dumb kids comedy cliches. In fact, there is actually one comment on the Peter Rabbit trailer right over here from I Hate Everything himself saying that I hate every aspect of this trailer, from hearing James Corden's annoying voice to that scene of two characters screaming that's in every awful animated movie ever, disgraceful. And I mean, well, that is Sony Animation for ya. It's freaking disgraceful. What the fridge else do you expect? And honestly, that's another aspect that I really hate from this trailer here, is James Corden's performance. My god. Like, you could tell that with his performance, James Corden wants to be, like, you know, he wants to be the funny man. He wants to be the life of the party. But he has no charm. He has no charisma in his performance whatsoever. It just makes him sound like a complete douchebag. Where, honestly, you hate Peter Rabbit and all his animal friends for screwing over and almost destroying Mr. McGregor's house in this trailer. I mean, really? And, you know, it honestly does shock me over the fact that James Corden, out of all people, has to be in this godforsaken movie, be the star of this movie. Considering that, it's amazing how he is still willing to go and voice another Sony Animation project after already being one of the stars of the Emoji Movie. Anybody with common sense would actually, like, if anybody with common sense who would end up doing a voice job in the Emoji Movie, they would look at this and they would vow never to do another voice work for Sony Animation again, unless they've rebuilt their reputation to be a little bit better so that people can maybe forgive them for being the creators of the Emoji Movie. And I mean, honestly, it's either A, for, like in the case of James Corden, it's either A, he has a really terrible agent that he seriously needs to fire in order to get a better one, or B, James Corden has no taste and no standards whatsoever. In which the latter probably wouldn't surprise me, because if it actually is B, then really there shouldn't be any surprise that there was that major controversy where James Corden gave a kiss to Sean Spicer at the Emmys. Really? I mean, that mouth is so tasteless to use it to voice like two Sony Animation films. So really, is it that surprising that he would kiss Sean Spicer? I mean, for God's sakes, I wouldn't even be surprised either if Anne Faris would be behind him to do the same thing. I mean, seriously. And even, like, the humor inside, I might have already stated before, like, the humor and the tone that they've already portrayed in Peter Rabbit is just, it's so mind-numbingly dumb that you could tell it's really trying to modernize it. It's really the fact that they really desperately try to be cool and hip with the kids, which honestly at this point, I think this is a signature of Sony Animation. Like, especially with their films like The Smurfs, Hotel Transylvania, and The Emoji Movie, they just really want to go and try to be cool and try to be hip and be filled with swag for the kids in order for them to hopefully relate to it. It's just so desperate that it's purely despicable. And honestly, it's because of that aspect right over there that I have not seen a single fan of the original Beatrix Potter works that, like, they are entirely pissed off at it. Like, they are purely offended. They're probably mad at Sony about this more so than they would be mad about the Emoji Movie. And I don't blame them. But then again, it shouldn't be that surprising that they would take a literary classic and turn it into this unwatchable mess. I mean, if you don't believe me, then go ask Peyo and go ask Judy Barrett. I'm just saying. I mean, seriously, like I Hate Everything says, this is nothing but purely freaking disgraceful. But you might be wondering, now you might be asking me, like, even though I have criticized a lot about this trailer right over here, is there anything good that I could say about it? Is there something that I could actually give credit to what this trailer is offering us? And I think I can actually manage to get something. And honestly, I will say that visually, it's not that bad. It's not the best, but at the same time, it is not the worst. I will say that the animation on some of the animals, at first glance, they don't look that bad. The design-wise, like, I know they're supposed to be, like, more realistic looking and, like, just wearing one piece of clothing onto them. You know, it's not that bad, and the textures are actually really nice on them. But I will say, though, that when it comes to the movements and stuff like that, like, considering that it is supposed to be this live-action animation hybrid, it's not really that convincing that they are in the real world. They still look like CGI cartoons. But I will say it's not that bad. Like, if this were done in a fully animated feature, this would actually be a pretty good job, I will say. So you might be thinking, oh, okay, so you're saying that Sony Animation did a good job on the animation. No, actually. No, they did not. Because funny enough, not even Sony Animation themselves would trust them to go and make the animation for Peter Rabbit. Because oddly enough, even though Sony Pictures Animation did put in their label, put in their brand to associate themselves with Peter Rabbit, the animation is actually done at Animal Logic. Now, you may know Animal Logic as the animation house that would go and create the visuals for movies like Legends of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole, what else is there? The Happy Feet movies, and of course, the recent Lego movies. And that's probably one big credit I will give to Sony Animation on this. I do understand why they want to go and do the decision to give Animal Logic the, you know, to give them the responsibility to go and create the animals for this movie, because Animal Logic, they can do an amazing job at it, and they really did prove themselves well, especially like with the Happy Feet movies, that they can do a wide variety of animals and just go and have fun with it, and even with the Legend of the Guardians as well. So that is a smart move, but still, however, like, it's not the best. Like I said before, it could have been done better. And especially, like, what does make it unbearable, it's not necessarily Animal Logic's fault. It's more because of the script and more of the management at Sony Animation. It's most likely them that they're demanding to do all these things to make Peter Rabbit go make it rain with freaking lettuces and to have a crazy party at Mr. McGregor's house. And also to have that scene where Mr. McGregor and that pig would be screaming at each other like, ah, 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 you know, stuff like that. So yeah, overall, I don't blame the people for being mad at Sony for creating such a garbage trailer for Peter Rabbit. It definitely does look like a piece of crap right over here. But yeah, overall though, if there is one lesson, we gotta stop being surprised that Sony Animation would make a crappy trailer right over here. And if you are curious to know when this piece of crap is going to be happening, then all you have to do is just wait until February of 2018 for Sony Animation to embarrass themselves once more. Okay, so for our next one, let's get into a trailer that is a little bit better. This is not the best movie that people are really anticipating much for, but this is certainly something that is a lot better than Peter Rabbit, that's for sure. And what I am talking about is the second trailer for Ferdinand, the next movie that is going to be from Blue Sky Studios. And the way that they executed this trailer is actually a little bit more different than you would expect. Because in here, it's not necessarily much a full trailer, but it's also partly an interview. Because the big selling point that they want to do right over here is the fact that it stars John Cena. And even right at the beginning, you see Ferdinand doing a little dance, and then you see the big logo saying John Cena. Like, this is the kind that you could definitely tell that it's trying to capitalize on the whole meme of, and his name is John Cena, and all that kind of stuff. And throughout the most part in this trailer, you see John Cena just talking a little bit about the Ferdinand movie. Most namely, however, he would discuss about his thoughts on his character, Ferdinand himself, and also the message of the movie, which is don't judge a book by his cover. So he really went into that. And throughout the whole time, we actually do see some new clips. And interestingly enough, we actually do get introduced to some new characters. Like, for example, in the trailer, like at the start of it, when you see Ferdinand being happy with his family at the start of the film, we're introduced by this dog character that shows that he could have a little bit of jealousy towards Ferdinand because he does seem like the favorite in the family. And, you know, there are some cute jokes, I will admit, that are in between. Like, you do see, like, the family just calling Ferdinand, oh, who's a good boy? And then you see the dog, I thought I was the good boy. But then at the same time, you also do see other characters. Like, you see this one bull that's meant more to be a fighting bull interacting with Ferdinand. And then the rest, well, you do get a lot of the same clips happening at the same time where you're with the hedgehogs, and you also got the big car chase where all the bulls are in the car, and you see like this one big car that did a major flip, and like the bunny is on top of Ferdinand and all that kind of stuff. That's basically the big thing that we got with Ferdinand. And overall with this trailer, I don't necessarily feel like this is meant to be as a trailer, but just more as an advertising piece. Well, technically, trailers technically are advertising pieces, but with this one, it's just trying to go and be more straightforward to sell the movie. And I think the big thing that they really do want to try to market it is towards the wrestling fans, or more specifically, the John Cena fans, because that's kind of the big thing that I'm getting from this trailer right over here. They're pretty much telling me to go watch this movie because John Cena is in it. And I have already expressed my thoughts before on John Cena's acting capabilities before, And honestly, I am actually quite impressed with it. Even when watching a piece of crap like Surf's Up 2 Wave Mania, he actually did provide a pretty good performance despite having a pretty crappy script. But, and even in the Ferdinand trailers that we have seen before, it does seem like he does give a pretty decent performance and a pretty heartwarming performance as well. So there could be some possibilities with it. But yeah, for the most part, it is giving us most of the same things that we have already seen before. And honestly, I'm not 100% sure if it's really going to be selling it to people to go and watch this film, considering the big factor for me is the fact that this is going to be released at the same time as Star Wars The Last Jedi. And we all know for a fact that everybody's going to go and see that instead of Godforsaken Ferdinand. So, I don't know, maybe it does have a chance to be cute. I have serious doubt if this is going to end up being bad, so maybe this is just going to be something that is going to be there that's going to bring in some decent entertainment. And personally, I will admit that for this trailer in particular, maybe I am being a little bit jealous. Sorry, that's not the word I'm going to use. Maybe I am a little bit more generous to it, mainly because I saw this trailer just after seeing the Peter Rabbit one. It definitely does help to be a little bit more open to Ferdinand. It's like, well, I mean, it ain't Peter Rabbit, so maybe I'll give this one a chance. I mean, seriously, like, you could do the same thing. Like, just watch the Peter Rabbit one first and then look at this Ferdinand trailer, and you'll see that maybe Ferdinand isn't that bad. Like, you'll find a little bit more respect for Blue Sky. He's like, you know, unlike Sony, Blue Sky isn't treating me like a freaking idiot. You know, so that's kind of the big thing with Ferdinand. So if you guys are curious to actually see Ferdinand and you don't necessarily care much about Star Wars The Last Jedi, then all you have to do is just wait for it to be released in theaters on December 15th. And now I have saved the best for last when it comes to the trailers that we've got this week. We already went through the really bad one with Peter Rabbit. We went through the decent one, it's okay, I guess, with Ferdinand. But with this one, I'm just going to say right now, this is not a good trailer. Calling it good is a massive understatement. This is an amazing trailer. This is fantastic. And out of all those trailers, actually, this is the one that's getting the most praise. On YouTube, as I am recording this, this is actually the number one trending video right now. And even the amount of likes that it's been getting, it is absolutely phenomenal. It is huge. And even the amount of views that it's been getting, it's honestly really crazy. And what I am talking about, of course, is the next animated feature brought to us by Wes Anderson, Isle of Dogs. And let me just go off and say right now, holy crap, this is one movie that is filled with surprises. You'd expect it to go into one direction, but it's going into several other places where you don't necessarily know where it's going, but in a good way. You want to know where it wants to go. So really, this is a trailer that works. It is really selling it to us, giving us a good amount to really want us to have more. And, you know, before I go crazy over this trailer, allow me to go and explain to you a little bit about what the Isle of Dogs is about, according to this trailer. Now, what it has presented to us is that we are 20 years after today. So this is 20 years in the future. No, don't worry, people. This is not set in Neo Tokyo, and the dogs don't have to go and save a boy from this crazy experimentation or anything like that. What's been going on is that apparently there's been this dog flu epidemic that has been going on in Japan. So apparently there's this mayor that decided to go and do this massive quarantine by taking all the dogs and put them in this island that is completely made out of garbage, which is why it is now known as the Isle of Dogs. But then suddenly, there's this one Japanese boy that took an airplane and flew to the Isle of Dogs. By the way, no, this is not Jiro Horikoshi we're not talking about over here. And he's pretty much looking for his dog Spots. So with the help of all these dogs, they want to go and try to find this kid's dog, while at the same time, they want to go and try to avoid all the different Japanese people that ultimately want to kill off the dogs, because technically they're sick. They got the dog flu and all that kind of stuff. Now, rather it be if it's going into a similar path to something like the recent Planet of the Apes trilogy, where maybe the dogs are just becoming a little bit more sentient because of this flu, and like when people get it, they would die. Maybe that would be the case. I don't know. But the reason why I say that this thing is filled with surprises, one movie that it does make me think a little bit about is actually Pixar's The Good Dinosaur, where you actually got this kid that audiences don't necessarily understand unless they actually speak Japanese. Like, this kid wants to go on this big journey to go in far-off lands to go and find his pet, which in this case is, coincidentally enough, his name is Spots. And, you know, it's kind of like this similar pattern, but, like, it kind of goes in that direction, but at the same time, it does not. Where in this movie, like, the selling point, at least from what this trailer is offering us, we see the different worlds that it's presenting us. Like, it wants to show us what this new Tokyo 20 years from now, or this new Japan 20 years from now looks like. Or what this entire island of, like, garbage and dogs look like, how it functions, and all that kind of stuff, and how the dogs think. And especially, like, one of the big selling points is regarding the animation. Holy crap, it looks godforsaken beautiful. It just screams out great stop motion, but at the same time, it also screams out Wes Anderson. Like, honestly, for me, like, when I first saw Fantastic Mr. Fox, for me, I feel like it was a weird movie at first because it was my first Wes Anderson movie, but the more I've seen it, the more I've learned to appreciate it and more loving the works of Wes Anderson. And seeing this right over here, you can definitely see the same type of cinematography and the same type of shots and placements of the characters, where you do have a lot of moments where the dogs would be staring right in front of the camera, and then you also got a few other characters that are just going to be on the side, and on top of that, you also got like all the characters just looking right in front, or they're just looking right on the side, like looking directly to the left or directly to the right. And on top of that, the acting style as well, considering that in this movie, it has a major all-star cast. Like, a lot of big names are associated in this film. I mean, I could list so many of them. I have them right in front of me, like right at the end of the trailer, where you got people like Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Jeff Goldblum, Bob Balaban, Bryan Cranston, Tilda Swinton, Liev Schreiber, Yoko Ono, Akira Takayama. What else? There's also Scarlett Johansson and all those people. And on top of that, it's not just about the dogs and the little boy as well. You do also see the side of like some of the humans as well, where you do have this one girl with an afro that actually has a crush on a Japanese boy. And also, well, the villain, of course, is going to be the Japanese mayor. So in a way, you do get a little bit of a vibe that it could go and take some small plot elements from Fantastic Mr. Fox as well. But overall, I am definitely excited for this. Oh, and also, one more thing I just want to mention regarding the animation that makes it so beautiful. You can tell how every single thing in here is computer animation. For fudge sakes, I'm sorry about that. Not computer animation. Everything is stop motion. There are even times when you would see like a lot of fighting scenes and a lot of smoke would come out, but the smokes, you could definitely tell it's done with practical effects. You could tell this was actually done in stop motion. They didn't use any computer animated smoke effects. They didn't do any, you know, they didn't use any computers. Like, what you see in front of you is actually captured in real life. And honestly, that's a beautiful art right over there. And it's almost lost in a way where we would have a stop motion animated feature that is 100% stop motion without the use of other animation mediums like computer animation or hand drawn or anything like that. It is beautiful. I just gotta go and say that right now. And you know, it's actually very interesting when it comes to 2018, because just recently, now we actually have the knowledge that there is going to be a total of three of them, or possibly we will have three stop motion movies. I mean, we already know that we're going to have Early Man, not just offered to us by Aardman, but by Nick Park as well. Recently this week, we also got the announcement that Laika is going to be releasing a movie in 2018 as well. And now we also got this as well. And immediately, this is going to be on my list of the most anticipated films of 2018. I mean, I already got a whole bunch of them in there. Like, I already have Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2, I'm excited for. Of course, there's The Incredibles 2. There's Early Man that I really am interested in. And now I got Isle of Dogs. And I cannot wait for this movie to be released. This looks like is going to be awesome. And if you guys are excited to go and check out the Isle of Dogs as much as I am, then all you have to do is just wait until it gets released in theaters on March 23rd, 2018. And so, finally, we shall now go and end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And we actually do have another big animation story for you today. And I'm not gonna lie, this was something that I just randomly stumbled upon when just looking for different movie news stories. And I was on The Wrap, honestly. I think, is it The Wrap? Yeah, it is The Wrap. So I was just looking into some stuff, and I saw on the side where they would have a section of some of the most popular articles that they currently have. And one of which really did caught my eye, and it seems like a really interesting story that did spiral into complete insanity. I'm just gonna say that right now. And the reason why I say that is actually regarding an incident involving the series Maya the Bee. And if you guys don't know what Maya the Bee is, Maya the Bee is a computer animated series that's exclusively on Netflix that's targeted exclusively for kids. Now, apparently, what Netflix actually did is that they actually removed one of the episodes of Maya the Bee, because apparently it actually did receive some massive complaints and it spiraled into controversy, of course. But you might be wondering why. Why is it that something as innocent as Maya the Bee would end up getting into controversy down to the point of having one of its episodes removed? Well, there is a reason. Apparently, there's this one shot that lasted for 4 seconds, and you actually do see a bit of a tree trunk. Or I think it's like a tree trunk or a cave or something like that. And on this tree, there is a drawing. And that drawing is the reason why they had to pull it out. Oh, well, you might be thinking, well, that drawing might not be so bad. I mean, like, well, why would they have to remove it? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the drawing is a penis. Yep, I mean, there is no way around it. It is flat out a big freaking penis, complete with balls underneath. Like, you got the shaft, you got the boober right on top, and then you got the two big balls hanging on the side. You give this picture to anybody, And they will tell you that this is, in fact, a freaking penis. So that's the thing. Like, it's pretty much flat out a penis. And this was actually discovered by a mother named Shay Robinson, who went on a total rant on Facebook and did an entire video saying, please be mindful to what your kids are watching. I did not edit any images whatsoever. This is Maya the Bee, Season 1, Episode 35. I know I'm not going crazy, and I know that something like this shouldn't be in a kid's show whatsoever. I'm extremely disgusted by it. There should be no reason my kids have to see something like this. I don't know if they're gonna, like, do something about this or what, but there's no reason why this should be in a show. So yeah, as you may notice, this is a mother who is entirely pissed off over the fact that their kids, her kids, would end up seeing a penis in Maya the Bee. But believe it or not, there is actually some action that's going to happen to it. The people who actually worked on the animated series, Studio 100, actually did come out with a statement of what's going to be going on. Studio 100 stated, "An absolutely inappropriate image has been discovered in a 4-second flyby scene in one episode of the total of 78 episodes in the series. The origins of this image obviously results from a very bad joke from one of the 150 artists working on the production." And trust me, the rabbit hole goes much deeper into it. They even stated that legal action has already started. Right now, they are going on the hunt to find out who the fridge did this. And, let me go and read this right over here. "This is unacceptable to the Studio 100 group as owner of the brand and all its partners, and doesn't reflect on the quality of its work and its values. Legal action has already been started. Studio 100 very much regrets this incident and would like to offer its sincere apologies to all Maya the Bee fans." So that's basically what's been going on. They're pretty much on the hunt to find that one artist that decided to draw a penis on Maya the Bee, but apparently it's going to be pretty difficult because now they got to scatter all around France and all around Asia to find out who the fridge is responsible for it. And I'm just going to go and say right now, if they do find that person who actually did put in a penis in Maya the Bee, I'm just going to say that, yes, he is definitely going to be in trouble. He is going to get, like, a lawsuit. He's going to be punished and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, where he is going to be hated by parents, he is going to be beloved by the internet for having the balls to do something as crazy as that, as putting a penis onto a kid's show. Like, this guy is going to live in godforsaken infamy. So, who knows what's going to happen. But I know he's going to get a mixed result of, like, total love and total hate. And considering that not many people really know about Maya the Bee, and sadly for the show itself, that's all people are really going to know about this cartoon. All they know is that, oh, that's the one where there's this one moment where we see a penis, right? if I could be serious for a moment, you know, the thing is, putting in a penis or putting in, like, phallic symbols or adult imagery onto a kid's project or onto animation in general, that's not the first time that this happened. I mean, there has been a long history of that with several examples. I mean, there are a few that I could think of on top of my head. Like, of course, there are some pretty big ones. There was actually one, like, I remember talking to some people about it, and they actually pointed to me out that there's this one, believe it or not, from an American tale, Fievel Goes West. Let me just go and look for the image right over here. I just need to get some context out of it. Where would it be? Okay. Oh, yes. Okay. Right over here. Now, there's this one scene where you see the cat character played by John Cleese, Cat K. Wall. Like, he was carrying, like, he was just carrying Tanya because she was singing. And, like, there's this one frame, literally one frame, where you just see Tanya, like, eyes closed, mouth opened, and you just see this tiny crude drawing of a penis. And it is positioned perfectly where it would go right into her mouth, like, here comes the train, choo-choo! I know that sounds insane, but you gotta go and look it up. Fievel Goes West penis. Search that on Google, and you will see this is not completely made up. And of course, I mean, you got Disney that is completely guilty of this as well. And probably the biggest example is The Little Mermaid. Because number one, you actually do have the infamous poster, where you got the characters all positioned nicely, and you got the beautiful castle behind her. And on that castle, one of the big towers is shaped exactly like a penis. Now, it's meant to be all seashell-themed, but all you see is just seashell, 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 penis. That could probably be Ariel's tower right over there, since among all her sisters, Ariel is the one that is desperately searching for the D. But then there is also another example in The Little Mermaid where you got that godforsaken priest. Where apparently there's this one moment where in the wedding scene where Ursula disguised as Vanessa and a hypnotized Eric, like they're about to be married. And you see the priest out there, he's just doing his job like, dearly beloved. But he has that one stupid knee that looks like he has a boner. Like, apparently, Vanessa is really that hot to the point that even the priest would get a massive boner from her. So, you got those examples right there. However, I will say, though, that it's not just guy private parts that would end up getting, you know, that would end up getting presents in animated projects. There is also some lady parts as well. A couple of examples that I can think of. For one, there is the scene in The Rescuers. Now, there's this one moment. Excuse me for a second. I just need to go and try to find that image. Ah, yes. Right over here. The thing is that you got this one scene where you got Bianca and Bernard where they're flying on Orville's back and, like, they're going down, you know, like a roller coaster where you see Bernard freaked out and Bianca having fun. And you see, like, behind them is a building that you can see where, like, they're going down fast. And in one frame, you actually see this not a drawing, you actually see a photo of a topless woman. And the woman, I will admit, she is a pretty woman. She actually has some really nice boobs. But yeah, that's basically, you got that one picture right over there. And it wouldn't be until a couple of decades later when people had the VHS of The Rescuers where they would actually stop and just, like, go frame by frame, and then they see that one picture of a naked topless woman. But then there is also another example where you got the top part of a woman, but then you also got the bottom part of a woman in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where there is one infamous scene where with Jessica Rabbit, like they're driving around in the cab and then suddenly it crashed and you see Jessica Rabbit flying off and like you just see her spinning in the air and then there's this one shot where you see underneath her dress and, well, let's just say she wasn't wearing any underwear. You actually see her vagina. And I think it is the Nostalgia Critic that said it best, that apparently Jessica Rabbit is so hot that the animators had to go and legit animate her vagina just so we could see that, just to see some of that good stuff, you know? So that's the thing. Animation does have a history of showing off some private parts where they don't have it. And I mean, it doesn't just, it doesn't just have to be related to nudity as well. It can be some dark themes where animators can just sneak in some, like, dark subliminal messages. One great example that I can think of is actually in the 2012 Lorax movie by Illumination, where there's this one scene with the grandma in the film where she was playing a game of, like, Boggle or something like that, and you actually see the letters actually spell out, "Kill me." And you know, honestly, I would actually love to see more animators try to sneak in some subliminal messages like that onto some animated projects. Like, honestly, the one that I want to see the most do that is actually a Sony animation person, like an artist and animator working at Sony Pictures Animation, try to sneak in like that type of subliminal message onto the movies like The Emoji Movie or The Star or Peter Rabbit or something like that, and just put in some kind of message saying, like, "Kill me, end my suffering, this is torture, help me." That would be amazing. If they can manage to try to sneak that in, that would just be absolutely phenomenal, and I would purely applaud that animator to do so. That's going to be a challenge for anybody working at Sony Animation. Try to slip in one of those subliminal messages, rather it be on the upcoming films like either Peter Rabbit for the people at Animal Logic, or like try to sneak it in on Hotel Transylvania 3. That's going to be quite fun. Or if you want to try to go and sneak in like a penis or boobs or a vagina, like you can do something like that as well, you know, just for the lulz. Like that's going to be, just to see like how things would go, and you know, try to spice up like the work environment, you know, just to see what would happen, just to put it in that frame of infamy. But yeah, I think overall though, since nobody knows much about Maya the Bee, I think that's going to be the only thing that people will remember about. Is that Maya the Bee is the show where there's this one scene where it has a penis on it. And I know this is not the first time that it happened, and it will certainly not be the last time that it will happen. So just stay on guard, because I'm sure that in the future, we could probably be seeing more penises, boobs, and vaginas onto some animated projects. And I don't mean adult animated projects, I mean on kids shows. And movies geared for kids. So just beware, because the dong is gonna be coming for ya. And that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Matthew Brunette or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505 also. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor? Just go and rate and review this episode. That would be very lovely of you. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button in our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Now tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes!